Since 1974, Common Ground features organic, local, regional food, bulk food, salad bar, deli, and more. For details or to find out about upcoming classes, call 217-352-3347 or visit commonground.org. Today's Disability Beat is sponsored by our community partner, Jet's Pizza. Jet's uses only premium ingredients, including dough made fresh daily. Jet's Pizza stores are located at 512 South Meal Street in Champaign, 352-3333, and 1907 West Springfield, 352-9992. Order online at jetspizza.com. It's 5:30, and you are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM.
My name is Jackie Walk from Special Olympics Illinois Area 8. You are listening to Disability Beat on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, community radio for the East Central Illinois.
This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat, and I welcome today my guest in the studio, Ben Anderson. Hi, Ben. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you very much. Good to be here.
It's good to have you here. Let me get the right mic on here for you, and then we'll be all set to go. So, Ben, you actually contacted me, several months ago now, and told me about your book.
Yes.
So, tell us a little bit about your book.
My book is called IQ of 63, So What? It is based on my life. I am 55 years old. I am the speed limit in the speed limit on off freeways.
The speed limit is 55, and that's how old you are, hey?
Yes.
Okay, well, I've got you beat there, but that's okay.
We won't talk about that.
Good. So tell us what your book is about. IQ of 63, So What? You obviously are a person with a disability. Talk about your beginnings.
I was born with cerebral palsy. My mother and dad were the common folks that live on a farm in North Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I talk the way I do. I have a North Dakota accent.
I didn't realize that.
Thank you very much. When my mother and dad realized that I had cerebral palsy, my mother grabbed every book on the shelf to figure out what cerebral palsy was. Because I was born in 1953 and there was not a lot of information about cerebral palsy out there.
Right.
In about 1957, they diagnosed me as a person that had a low 60 IQ.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, they thought mildly mentally disabled.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, they put me into a special class, and I graduated from special ed in 1972.
Now, in your book, you talked about going to a special school. Did you go to a residential school for a while?
Yes, for 8 years. I was there for 8 years to learn how to walk and speak and dress myself, and did a lot of therapy, and I was the waiters, and then that was a bigger school, but in 1965, they recommend me to go home and be put into the special ed classroom in Kemmer, North Dakota.
So you were away from your family for 8 years.
Yes.
And what? How old were you when you went?
I was 4 to 12 years.
4 to 12 years you were in a special school. How far away from your family were you?
250 miles.
Oh, my gosh. How often did you see them?
But about every 6 weeks.
That was a long drive for them to come and visit
yes.
you, wasn't it? Did you even understand at that point what was going on?
Probably not. I was more interested in playing with my John Deere tractor and playing with the kids that I played with. I was not aware of my own disability until later in life.
The school that you went to in, what state was that in?
Jamestown, North Dakota.
So you were in North Dakota and your family lived in South Dakota?
No. North Dakota.
It's a big state.
Yes.
250 miles away.
Yes.
Okay, so when you did that, what impact did that have on your family? Because you have, didn't you have a brother and a sister?
I have a sister. She is about 2.5 years older than I am.
Mm-hmm. What impact did it have on them?
Well, they were probably confused trying to figure out what was going to happen to me when I get older.
Mm-hmm.
If I were going to be in a home here, what would happen to me?
And when you came back, then they said you said they put you in a special class in your school that you would have gone to if you did not have a disability?
Right.
And how did that go?
You know, I was confused at that time because academically, I thought I was okay.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I've been told all my life that I had low IQ. And so, therefore, I was confused. I had dreams. I had desires to go on to college, to write a book, to be a published figure, to travel. So I had a lot of dreams and a lot of desire, but I had some tapes in the back of my mind that said that I was not able to do that because of my disability.
When you're told so frequently that you can't do something, do you really start to believe it yourself?
Exactly. They self-prophesize. It's an ugly thing, but we all need to live with that stuff.
How did you get along with the other children at your school when you came back home?
It was difficult. Because they began to tease me and made fun of me. Because you need to remember that I was with people with disabilities for 8 years of my life. And now I'm with people without no disabilities. And they made fun of me. And that was not a good thing. And for the first time in my life, I realized that I was different from everybody else.
And thinking back, what was the worst experience that you had in that regard?
People would pick on me. People would call me names, and they would make fun of me.
Did you have friends at the school?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I had people that would stick up for me. Mm-hmm. But I had other people that would stick up for me one day, and then the other day they would make fun of me.
Mm.
You know, we were teenagers, and teenagers are like the wind, they come and go, and they have good attitudes and bad attitudes, and, well, you know.
Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah.
What is your message overall that you give to parents of young people with disabilities?
Overall, with parents, I want to give them hope. I want to give them hope that the sun would come out and they would be able to see it in the resources that people can provide with, for them, for the children, that they are not alone in the journey. Sometimes it sounds like they are alone, but there's a lot of people, there's a lot of parents that feel alone, and we need to bind together as parents to share with, to share insights about each other, because we are not alone. We belong to a community. And I think community, we all are different. Some of us have intellectual disabilities, and some of us have physical disabilities, and some of us have hidden disabilities. And we all need to reach out to each other, to help each other to overcome whatever disabilities that we may have.
Thanks, Ben. Ben's website is bendanderson.com.
I'm just a pilgrim on this road, boys. I'm just a pilgrim on this road, boys. I'm just a pilgrim on this road, boys. This ain't never been my home. Sometimes the road is rocky along the way, boys. Sometimes the road was rocky along the way, boys. Sometimes the road was rocky along the way, boys.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Welcome to the show today, Mike Workman, who is a person with bipolar disorder who has been through what he describes as crisis and recoveries, and has a very interesting story about his experiences with that disability. And also joining us in the studio is a guest that we've had here before on this very topic, Zelig Bartel, who is the person who leads the Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance here in Champaign. So welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
When was it that your family discovered that you were struggling with bipolar disorder?
Well, I didn't discover that I had bipolar disorder, and it really, the symptoms didn't appear until later in life. Right around the time I was around 38 or 39, I noticed that I started feeling what I would call very depressed, and it didn't seem to go away. It just seemed to get worse. A lot of the things that I normally like to do, all of a sudden I found myself not wanting to do. The things that normally I had the motivation for to complete, I found myself lacking in motivation. I found myself kind of isolating also from friends and family. I went to the doctor, to a general practitioner, and he diagnosed it as depression. So I started taking depression medication along with some anxiety medication because with my depression, anxiety was there also. And that continued on for probably around 3 years or so, and it felt like I was feeling a little better, but I still felt like there was something more. Around 2002, I had what is considered a psychotic episode. And that was a very scary thing.
What did that look like?
Well, a psychotic episode, basically for me, I stayed conscious through it. Some people don't. Some people, sometimes you go completely unconscious, basically. But I remembered most of it, and I just became very, very angry, and your mind basically takes over and creates its own reality. You're no longer in what true reality is. Your thoughts are coming 100 miles an hour, and it just it's just chaotic in your brain.
Where were you when this happened?
I was at my residence at my home. Luckily, at that time, no one was hurt. The police came and they got an ambulance, and I was taken to a hospital here in town, and spent 5 days getting on the right medication. Now, at that time, a doctor diagnosed me at that time with bipolar disorder,
mm-hmm.
which I found later on is very common. A lot of times people do get diagnosed with depression and miss, the doctor may miss the bipolar portion of it, because people come in to see a doctor a lot of times when they're not feeling well. When you're in the highs of the mania, you're feeling good. There's no reason to go to the doctor unless you go too high. In my case, there probably wasn't enough questions to ask or something like that to really find out exactly, hey, is this guy got bipolar or is he just depressed?
Mm-hmm. And so talk a little bit about the recovery process. It wasn't just medication that got you through it, was it?
Right. Now, that first incident I told you about, that was the minor of the two.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the second one was a lot worse. It was terribly worse. I was diagnosed with bipolar 1 in 2002 with depression and anxiety, and I was on a course of medication. And I was doing better and feeling better and better as time went along. And a couple of years later, I was discussing with my doctor about maybe coming off some of the medications, because I was on three or four different kinds of medications, and thought, you know, hey, if I can come off anything, I'd like to, you know. We started decreasing. He said to decrease a certain medication, and we started slowly coming down off of that medication. About 6 to 7 months after I'd come off of all of that particular medication, which was a mood stabilizer, I had another psychotic episode. And unfortunately, this one was pretty violent. I took my pocket knife out and started stabbing my eyes. I also basically blacked out and stabbed my in-laws that were there at the house. Luckily, they weren't hurt seriously. But I do now have permanent damage in my right eye. So.
And did you have any consciousness of this when it was happening? Do you remember any of it?
None whatsoever. I remember at the point when I was stabbing myself in the eye, I remember that. And then it's just like a big black area coming. And all I remember seeing is it just closing down to a circle. And then everything went black. The next thing I remember was being right next to my father-in-law and having a knife in my hand and thinking, what did I just do? And I seen blood, and I knew what I must have done. At that time, and even for another 3 or 4 days later, after I'd been in the hospital, I hadn't even learned that I had stabbed my mother-in-law. I didn't even know that at all. So I was completely not myself.
How long did that episode last before you actually were able to learn the results of this episode?
Well, I was the actual coming to, I would say, from blacking out to then again seeing things, I'm guessing probably didn't take more than a couple of minutes at the most. But I don't know for sure. My in-laws would probably know for sure on that or closer to that. I know that that whole weekend, this happened on a weekend, I was kind of in and out of being psychotic. Mm-hmm. So that weekend really is a blur for me. There's only certain bits and pieces I remember.
How long ago was that?
That's been about 3 years ago.
And since then, have you had any other episodes, or do you feel like you're pretty well under control medically at this point?
Yes, I am very, very under control. The medications, they basically, when I got back in the hospital, they immediately got me back on mood stabilizers and things. And since I've been back on the right medication, I haven't had any problems whatsoever. I haven't had any kind of mania or, you know, really, you got the mania, and then mania, if it goes extreme, will step into the psychotic, and I haven't even gotten into the mania part. So my medication is working very well.
Do you recognize that on your own, or is that something that you have to rely on friends and family for?
I recognize that on my own pretty much now, but I also, my wife is very good about watching for any signs with me. She's educated herself, and she is she's very good about you know, Mike, are you feeling well or this or that. She would be a good spotter if things started going
bipolar disorder, because mm-hmm. I think one thing that a lot of folks don't understand is somebody can go through a significant event like you did and still live a productive life in the
right.
community. So talk about what you do, what you're interested in, and what your life is like day to day.
Okay. I have a great family, first of all. My family rallied behind me big time through this whole incident. Not only that, but friends, close friends, and the people at work that I work with. Very, very, very good support. A lot of prayers went up for me up through this, and I do deeply appreciate everybody for that, and that makes a big difference. So many people that I've talked to now with my volunteer work with the DBSA group don't have the family support, and without family support, it's a lot harder to get through illnesses. Since I've gotten through, and really I feel like I'm doing very, very well, and have some, you know, some insight to certain things, I've been trying to give back by way of the DBSA group. I do part-time facilitate the group, and I feel like I can bring something to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally, when new people come, Zelik or myself, I just go into my story. And people hear my story, I think it kind of helps them think, wow, if this guy can, you know, go through what he just went through and turn around and have a normal, good life, then, you know, maybe I can too.
Okay. Is there something that you would like people out there in the community that don't have any experience with bipolar disorder to understand about it and about you and people who are, you know,
right.
are in the same boat that you are?
Well, first of all, I'd like people to know that this is an illness that is caused by chemical imbalances in the brain. It's something that you don't have control over. Just like to a certain extent, if I developed diabetes down the road, you know, I may have not have had any kind of way of preventing that. It's the same way with mental illness. It's just something that, you know, It may be in your DNA that you're going to get it. It's really no different than a medical condition. The only thing of it is we haven't had as much studies on mental illnesses as we have on, you know, regular physical ailments. So I think a lot of times people are a little bit hesitant, a little bit afraid of people that do have mental illness. But remember this too, it's very, very real. It's when you're in a depressive state, you are feeling, everything feels very, very real. You feel completely tired. You feel pains that may not really be pains, but you feel them as they are truly pains.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets to the point that you feel like that the only relief you're going to get is possibly death. And that's when it gets scary. If somebody gets to that point, that's when they've got to know, hey, I've got to tell a friend. I have got to go to the hospital. I've got to call a helpline. I've got to talk to somebody about this because this isn't right, you know. And that's what I feel that the illness, when the illness is fully matured and got the person down as much as it wants, that could be the outcome, is death. And that's where you see a lot of the suicides and stuff like that, is people have just gotten so down that they just don't feel like there's any way that they could ever get better. And I'm here to tell them, all of them out there, every single one of them, there is a way to get better. Everyone can get better. You just need to ask for help.
I just want to indicate that bipolar disorder especially is a very deadly illness if untreated. In a lifetime, 15% of all people with bipolar disorder will commit suicide.
So where do they go for help, Zalig?
First thing is to go to a qualified mental health professional, a psychologist or a psychiatrist. Now, the difference is that a psychiatrist is a medical doctor. And major mental illnesses are illnesses of the body, so it requires medication and careful evaluation. I would go to your general practitioner and ask for a referral to a psychiatrist, or go to the local mental health center for an evaluation where their clinicians can make an evaluation and then make a referral. The local mental health center in Champaign-Urbana has doctors. There are also doctors in the community, several in Champaign-Urbana who can help.
And the Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance would also be a good resource.
Absolutely.
I hope that by you taking the time to speak to our listeners today, that they have a better understanding of bipolar disorder and that there is hope for people as long as they get connected and get treated.
Yes, there is.
Okay, great. Thanks for joining us today, Mike. It was great having you here, and Zelig, too.
Thank you.
This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available on our website at www.disabilitybeat.com. Send your comments and show ideas to disabilitybeat@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Have a great week, everyone.
I don't know what they're doing.
Carol, can you hear me? Hey, this is Sandra Auten, and you are listening to CU Progressive News. We are trying to get Carol Adams on the line as we speak. Our state representative is going to be... So sorry about the problem there. Ask her which line she's calling in on. Maybe we should know. When it rings up there, we'll know. I'm going to get started on this, and we're going to try our best to get Carol on the line in just a minute.